Next item on the agenda, item number six, I presume it's Shonsi or Shoansi? Shonsi Preservation Society, number 11-1146. Mr. Woodward?
Morning, Commissioner Bowman.
Morning, sir.
Commission members, I'm Jay Woodward. For the newer members, I haven't presented in a while before the commission. I honestly try to avoid it whenever I can, but sometimes it can't be avoided. And we are here today to discuss the Shonsi Haddon project. The Shonsi Preservation Society is requesting after-the-fact authorization to retain 162 linear feet of open pile pier, two uncovered boat lifts, and an additional authorization to construct a 30-foot long by 20-foot wide open-sided boathouse over one of those lifts at their existing community pier on Stamper's Bay, which is off the Piankatank River at the end of Shonsi Lane in Middlesex. There's quite a bit of history with this project, with this parcel. I got my evaluation down to four pages. I'm hoping that I can give you some additional information to clarify and not further confuse some of the issues. Here's the site location, just after you go over the Twiggs Ferry Bridge into from Matthews to Middlesex. This embayment is known as Stamper's Bay off the Piankatank. Again, coming over the bridge, see a little island here, Berkeley Island, Stamper's Bay off the Piankatank. The project site is located on the northern shoreline. The majority of the shoreline along Stamper's Bay is actually relatively undeveloped. There's some residential development down along the southeastern shoreline, but the majority of it is undeveloped. As you'll see, there's some larger parcels. In fact, Berkeley Island, it's my understanding, is owned by Camp Piankatank, which also owns a large portion over here to the west of Stamper's Bay. Our 2000 series aerial, again showing Berkeley Island. This is the pier in question. You'll see some residential piers along this shoreline, but the majority of the shoreline is relatively undeveloped. And a little zoom in on the pier as it existed in 2009. In August, we received an application in the name of Jane Haddon, in care of Tony and Lynn Martin, and they were requesting authorization to construct a 600-square-foot open-sided boat lift and 100 linear feet of additional pier at an existing pier at the property on Stamper's Bay. The application was submitted by Richard Callis, the president of R&W Marine Construction. Application indicated a cover lift and additional pier sections would be for a single user, but initial review, desktop review of the application indicated that maybe this wasn't a private pier. There were some property line issues. So I had sent a letter to them on August 24th asking for clarification as to the actual proposed use and who owns the pier. We did receive a response to that through the agent on August 24th indicating that Mrs. Haddon and her brother, Mr. Morrell, owned the pier and they used it jointly and indicated that it was adjacent to their properties. They also indicated there's two vessels moored at the pier, one owned by Mr. Morrell, the other owned by the Martins. So that indicated to me that it's probably not a private single-family residential riparian pier, but rather at least a joint-use pier. The same day we received the application, I was doing my site inspection up in Middlesex and discovered that here's a couple of aerials also for reference. Again, just this is in 2009. This is the amount of structure that was built then, a bit of a T-head pier, L-head pier, I mean, and additional docking with a boat lift in this lift here.
Would that have been permitted, what we see there present in 2009?
If in fact we determined that it was for a single riparian lot owner's private, non-commercial use, we would have probably found it to be exempt.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, it's difficult to tell lot lines. Had this photo been represented to staff, we might have said, well, it looks like it might be in front of this lot, but is it also maybe encroaching into this riparian area? So, you know, we might have done a little additional review, but at the time of the original, and I'll get into that in a second, in 2002, but I wanted to make the point that in 2009, this is the structure as it existed. And more recently, as of February, or as of actually August, this was the original structure, and you can see some additional slip, additional decking. You can almost see the difference in color variation from the weathered decking. Again, this is all of the Shaughnessy area, all of these cottages. So, again, getting back to the application we received, these are the application drawings in the name of Haddon. The application indicated that this was an existing pier with boat lift slip with the hatched, and the new would be this slip, and also asking for a open-sided boat house to cover this slip. Again, seeing that this was the Haddon parcel, this was an adjoining property under APO number 1, and additional lots indicated to us that maybe this was outside of the riparian area of Haddon, so that was why one of the reasons I asked for the additional information. When I got down there on August 24th, this is what I saw. You actually walk down a kind of a community ramp, dirt landing to the base of the flat area, and this is the existing structure that was represented in the application as being existing, and this is new. Proposed. The only thing that hasn't been constructed over and above what they applied for
is the roof
over this slip. I returned to the office, indicated that we may be in situation of after the fact, encouraged them not to build the roof, you know, to stop everything, and we needed to take a look at it. I also asked for a meeting on site with the applicants and the contractor to try to get a handle on where we were with all of this. Conducted that site meeting in the beginning of September 6th, with Mr. Martin and his wife, Mrs. Haddon, and Richard Callis, the contractor. We discussed some of the history of the property, where we are, who used the pier, what was the ultimate build-out proposal, things of that nature, and kind of came away with a list of things that we needed from them for as additional information to continue our review. Prior to the meeting, I had gone back to look in our files to see what history we had for this particular parcel and this particular pier, and found back in 2002 there was an application by Mark Morrell, or Morrell, and I apologize, but see? Morrell. For a private pier replacement, essentially. There was an existing structure with a boathouse. The proposal, and you'll see drawings in a second, the proposal was to demo the boathouse and rebuild a small single-slip L-head pier. We reviewed that again desktop, given the information that was provided to us in the application, made the determination that it appeared to be a private, riparian, non-commercial pier that would meet the exemption in code statutory authorization. So a letter was submitted back in 2002 allowing that to go forward as a private pier. But again, at the time, that was just for this main stem pier with this small deck area here. It did not include this inverted T or obviously any of this other new construction. Here is that application back in 2002. Remove existing boathouse, rebuild 10x10 covered deck. The other portions of the application throughout indicated private, single-family, user, riparian. I mean, all the boxes and all the information would lead us to believe this was a private pier. There's no other property lines represented on the upland that would indicate that maybe it's out in front of somebody else's property. This is a Vegan, our 2002 series Vegan, which while the photo was taken in 2002, we at staff weren't using these back in 2002, so we didn't have this tool. But clearly there was a pier in this area that included boathouse or boathouses, covered slips, and at the time of the 2002 application, it was to demo this portion and rebuild this portion. But again, it was represented as Mark Morrell's private pier at the NPN. Bless you. It should be noted, this pier is also associated with the Haddon Family Shaughnessy parcel, and I believe it's associated with this cottage. So some of the additional information that we received indicated that here again is the river. The existing pier extends from this portion of what's called a rec area, recreation area, or a common area going down to the water. There are 7 individual waterfront lots within the subdivision that represent Block A. There's additional block, where's Block B, said? Block C and Block B. Our understanding is the whole subdivision is all Haddon family, and that individuals own different parcels therein. So we were comfortable at that point in looking at this as a community pier for the Haddon family. In fact, Mr. Martin indicated that rather than calling the application at that point in the name of Jane Haddon, we changed it to the Shaughnessy Preservation Society. And just as a side note, this is a lot of times the issues that we have on staff with community piers in front of condos or what have you. You have individual lot owners who think it's their pier. So they go out and start making modifications to this particular structure, which is actually a structure associated with the association. And we always feel that the association needs to bring those applications forward. So we have one person speaking for the parcel.
What standing or what exactly is the Shaughnessy Preservation Society? Is it is it incorporated? Is it a
I don't believe it's incorporated right now. I think we're kind of in the process of going in that direction. I just wanted to, we at the staff level wanted to be comfortable with the Haddons and the folks we'd spoken to, that we understand who would potentially be using this pier now and in the future, and as a way of encapsulating that user group, they're calling themselves the Shaughnessy Preservation Society.
Because if we're dealing with something that occurred, I understand what staff is trying to do and trying to move toward in the future to call this what it actually is, mm-hmm. but aren't we actually dealing with something a little different as before the commission today in an after-the-fact aspect of potential violations?
Correct. And I don't know that it makes a whole lot of difference at this point in time as far as any authorization that may be granted. I just wanted to clarify that the application came in the name of Jane Haddon.
Okay.
And we have there's a Block A, application name. Block B, property owner name. Sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different.
Okay.
And when they are different, we want to say, okay,
all right,
let's have an understanding.
Just so that the commission understands that this is what's proceeding as far as the permit's concerned, but what action may be taken in reference to this construction may be individual in nature, correct?
I think.
Okay.
This is right. I've already confused things. I apologize.
No. I understand.
Okay. At any rate, when this is some of the additional information that came in. It's a plat of the land that was then subdivided. It's a 16.67 acre parcel. In looking at it, we were trying to get a handle on who owned what, and it came to our attention that when you follow these lot lines, in fact, there may be a parcel of land between the lots and the river. Ergo, none of the lots are riparian. We looked at the Middlesex County tax maps. That seemed to support our determination. However, additional information came forward that the whole parcel, when it was subdivided from the prior owner by description in the deed, in fact, is a waterfront parcel. Where this looks like Charles Palmer, which is now Ballantyne, might have ownership here. I was assured by the Ballantyne family their parcel comes down and this little thread makes up the boundary, and Ballantynes do not own the waterfront. It's in fact, the parcels are in fact waterfront. So we had to clear that hurdle as well. Again, just to offer more confusion. Here are the names of the lot owners, all of which have some relation to the Haddon family. So again, what we have is, at this point, an after-the-fact request to not only retain this open slip, but this additional structure that was built over and above what was applied for under the Morrell application. And just to give you a little bit more idea, I actually added, or tried to, but it didn't get saved. At any rate, this is the common rec area. I added this lettering here. It came in under Haddon because there is some, still in my mind, some confusion as to who owns the common area. But the pier comes off of this common landing in front of the Morrell parcel. This is Chester Haddon, which would be lot 1, lot 2, lot 3 is Jane Haddon. Application. What's before the commission today is after-the-fact authorization for everything you see colored in here, including a lift, and additional authorization for open-sided boathouse over this slip here. I'm going to leave this slide up. Actually, when you stand up on the bank at the cottages and look down, it actually gives you a better perspective than flying in the plane, or a better picture at any rate. You'll see that there's been a lot of correspondence back and forth asking for additional information, getting additional information. Bottom line is we believe that the application is ripe for your consideration at this point in time. The project is unprotested by any of the neighbors. The news ad didn't turn up any opposition. There are no leased oyster grounds that are affected by the proposal. Middlesex County Wetlands Board, add to the confusion, considers this a private pier. So therefore, they did not require authorization because it's a private use in their definition pier. The Virginia Health Department is notified, we feel this is other places where boats are moored. It's something other than a private pier. They do not object, provided the owners of this pier are the family members associated with the cottages up on the hill, and believe that any bathroom facilities would be within a reasonable distance to the pier. Conservation and Recreation indicated that there are species, not endangered species, natural heritage resources, in the area, but the size and scale of the project don't cause them any concern. So I'm going to have to apologize because I think I need to read some of this verbatim just to make sure it's straight. Since the pier for use by the Haddon family has existed in this location for many years without any opposition that we are aware of, we believe the current request to cover one slip as well as retain the decking that's been constructed without authorization is a reasonable use of state bottom. We generally would support a single community-use pier in lieu of multiple individual private piers, as that single structure tends to localize, concentrate, and potentially even minimize the amount of decking and encroachment over state bottom. The applicant actually took the initiative to contact all of the other lot owners, all of the other cottage lot owners, to basically let them know that if this moves forward, and potentially they may talk about additional construction downriver, that those lot owners would be willing to give up their riparian right to wharf out from that individual lot. We don't have anything in writing to that effect, but there has been communication that says, to get back what we had and to keep it going, you may have to give up your right for a private pier. And again, we at the staff level probably wouldn't recommend any further construction until something legal, either through an LLC or severance of riparian rights is recorded.
Hey, let me, not to mess you up as far as your presentation, sure. I want to get back to a comment you made. It says, we believe the current request to cover one of the existing slips as well as to retain the previously unauthorized additions to the pier is reasonable. What you mean, not to put words in your mouth, is what you mean by reasonable is not necessarily the construction without authorization, but what is reasonable is the use of the state bottom. Is that correct?
Correct. The existence of the structure that's currently there and whether or not it would be something we would be comfortable recommending approval for had we gotten it.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I understood what you meant for reasonable at that point.
Yeah, reasonable and permissible is...
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Reasonable.
Again, so the additional family owners that own the waterfront lots have been contacted. All but six of the seven have been contacted. The seventh already has a pier on their parcel. Of the six that were contacted, five of which we have a record in here saying, sounds good to me. But again, that agreement is not formally recorded as a covenant or deed restriction. One lot already has a pier. Although we understand the other waterfront lot owners may wish to construct additional slips on this pier for their use, and it might eventually be reasonable to allow such construction, we would be hesitant to recommend approval of any future expansion at this pier without the owners of those waterfront lots recording formal deed restrictions that would legally prohibit them from exercising the riparian right to wharf out. So I am finally to the summary and recommendation. Given the nature of the subdivision and the history of the prior pier and boathouses, which serve the families within the subdivision, staff can understand some confusion on the part of the applicants regarding private use versus community use versus other places where boats are moored. We get this a lot. Staff is confident the applicants now understand that the pier is, in fact, a community use pier as far as VMRC is concerned. And any future modifications to that pier would need formal authorization and would need to be brought forward with a permit application and prior review. Again, getting to the Shaughnessy Preservation Society, we would like to see any future, and I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but any future proposal would not be in one of the names of the other seven lot owners. It would be in a single name representing all as a community pier. So, again, there's some misunderstanding there on the part of the applicants. We can kind of understand that. Staff believes, however, that Mr. Callis, as an experienced professional marine contractor, should have understood the difference between private single-family use and community use when representing this application and the prior application. He was the contractor agent for the prior application under the name of Morrell, which was expanded upon over and above what we reviewed initially back in 02. When I first visited the site, it was pretty clear. You have to kind of park up on the hill and walk down this little landing. I guess a golf cart could get down there, but it didn't appear to be emanating from or originating from a private individual lot. It appeared to be coming from a common lot. There's a little shed down there and storage. It just screams community use to those of us that hear that. We're also very concerned that with this current application, which applied for this newer section, if the mouse comes, all of this that you see in the brand new fresh wood was applied for. You know, that was what I was walking down there to look at a proposal of, and it's in. So, again, asking them not to put the roof on because we've got some situation, we've got some structures here that are unauthorized. So, as a professional contractor and agent, staff is very concerned that Mr. Callis, knowingly or unknowingly, is representing things inaccurately that on behalf of clients around the waterfront. Mr. Callis has submitted a letter assuming responsibility for the unauthorized work at the pier. Accordingly, after reviewing the project and history of the site, all the comments in the official record, and all of the factors in 28.2.1205 of the code, we recommend after the fact approval of the structures that were built without authorization, the 162 linear feet of decking, this lift, and further, we recommend further authorization for the uncovered, I keep saying that, open-sided covered boat slip, which is kind of in accordance with our standard open-sided, less than 700 square feet as a reasonable structure. We are recommending triple permit fees, which would total $300, and a royalty for the bold outline of the pier, both the new structure and the original structure, which totals $5,379 at a $1.50 a square foot rate. Again, we kind of look at it as not just the decking that's over the state bottom, but the water that's encompassed within that private use. So I did a calculation encompassing the slips as well as the decking, and came out with 3,586 square feet. I'm coming up with that grand total for the royalty as a community use, not public use per se, but community use, private use marina, like a documentium. And that's, the rent is in accordance with our recommendations on the schedule that the commission adopted in 2005. We did discuss the recommended royalty with Mr. Martin, and he expressed that he didn't think a royalty was appropriate since the pier is being constructed in lieu of the private piers that those lot owners would otherwise be entitled to. That may well be the case, but we are left recommending to you what we would normally recommend, and I guess he can make that case to you on his own. Staff understands Mr. Martin's concern, but this is a case we believe the royalty is appropriate because the pier may be used by the entire subdivision. There may be lot owners up in Block A, Block B and Block C that would come down and use the pier, maybe not have a slip, but they would be using the pier for crabbing or fishing or what have you. Staff is also recommending a civil charge being assessed to the applicants in the amount of $600, using the matrix given a minor degree of environmental impact and a minor degree of deviation. I don't know that they knew better. They hired a contractor and assumed he would take care of all of that. They've been very cooperative in meeting with us both on site. They came down and met with us here at the agency. They provide all the information we've asked. However, we do remain very concerned that the agent contractor in this project has some culpability. He prepared both this application and the prior application. He did the construction on the after-the-fact construction, the new and the old, and we therefore believe that while the environmental impact may be minor, the degree of deviation is on the maximal end. He should have known better, in our opinion. Therefore, using the matrix, that comes out to a civil charge amount recommended for the contractor in the amount of $1,800. I haven't really gotten confirmation that they would be willing to pay that yet. That's something, I guess, that can be discussed today. That's all I have without belaboring it. If there's any specific questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Mr. Plumley.
Jay, the issue over the name of the applicant is interesting to me. If the application of Jane Haddon is not before us, is that accurate? Has that been withdrawn?
If you look at 2-2 in your application booklet, that the applicant's name is Jane Haddon. Our folder was under Jane Haddon. Care of Tony and Lynn Martin. Lynn is Mrs. Haddon's daughter, and Tony is Mrs. Haddon's son-in-law. The property is Jane Haddon, as far as I know, because Jane Haddon owns the common area. In our attempts to start thinking of this in terms of a community pier, I may have inadvertently caused some confusion by asking, we had asked Mr. Martin and the applicants to come up with something. We need to look at this as not just an application in the name of Jane Haddon, because already Mr. Morell owns the pier, or Mr. Morell uses the pier as a separate parcel, as well as the Martins as a separate parcel from Jane Haddon's. So I would leave it maybe to you to give us some...
Well, I guess what I'm asking about is, you know, we have a certain time period to act upon application. This is an after-the-fact request now, and maybe the time period doesn't really apply. But I'm curious to know if Jane Haddon owns the common property, and there is no actual entity.
Mm-hmm.
If there was any other LLC for the developer of the lots or anything else that could be used, because if we were to authorize or permit this facility with conditions, et cetera, that you mm-hmm. brought up, there's no one to hold accountable for those conditions if that entity doesn't exist, because it's a non-existent entity.
I didn't think about it in those terms. You know, right now, it was our understanding with the meeting that this would be considered the Shaughnessy Preservation Society, and just like care of Tony Martin and Tony and Lynn Martin acting on Mrs. Haddon, Jane Haddon's behalf, that it would be Tony and Jane Martin or Mr. Martin, Shaughnessy Preservation Society, care of Tony and Lynn Martin.
Is Jane Haddon's an individual and it's not an LLC? It's
correct. I don't believe in it.
She's right there.
Doesn't look like
that. May be the best way to answer this. I don't know from a I don't want to call it a housekeeping standpoint because that diminishes it, but we could certainly take it back and call it what it was when it first came in, which was Jane Haddon. Jane Haddon was applying for this.
I'm certainly not the last word on this, but it would seem a little odd to permit it in the name of a non-existent entity that we could not hold accountable for any violation.
That was the point that I was going with when I began with, Mr. Plumley. I believe you're correct. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Jay, thanks for a great presentation on a complicated case. I had a couple of questions, and I just want to make sure I understand your advice in the context of the discussions that occurred about possible severance of riparian rights and the discussions that have occurred among the property owners between them and staff. As I understand it, your recommendations stand on their own 2 feet and don't require a severance of those riparian rights as a condition of this permit at this point in time. But if there were to be further expansion of the pier applied for in the future, then at that point you would seek some sort of formal recording of those separations. Is that accurate, or are you in fact considering that as a permit condition now?
No, I think your former comment was where we were looking. Let's get what's already there authorized before we take any further action. But in the event, because there's discussions when we sat with the Haddons or Mr. Martin and Mrs. Haddon that, well, how many more slips can we get in the future? And we kept saying, let's take care of what we've got now. And not that we wouldn't entertain any requests in the future, but if we were going to allow expansion of this pier in the future under our permit conditions, it would probably likely only be if they gave up their rights to pier out. We would have to get something back more formal other than an agreement that was signed between the family.
Okay.
And I brought this up just to kind of show you where, imagine if you will, this additional structure that's built in about this location. At the current time, it doesn't appear to extend out into the riparian areas, wherever those are, of these other lots. This is Mr. Morrell. This is Chester Haddon, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. And this is Tony and Lynn Martin. This is Jane Haddon. Okay, I'm not sure where Tony and Lynn Martin are then. But until it were to go over in front of these other parcels, so Chester Haddon is Tony and Lynn Martin?
Sorry,
that's not right. The pier as it exists does not appear to us to represent a potential riparian infringement in front of these other cottages. At such time that there's an expansion, we're certainly getting into that realm. We would want to have assurance that they either give up their right or that they authorize it. Or
Mr. Robbins, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think this is getting more complicated than it needs to be for the record, but continue.
Just to follow up, Jay, earlier in your presentation you expressed concern about representations that were being made, I think you said, around the waterfront by the contractor. And I just want to make sure I understand The violations that are in question relative to the contractor or any representations he made, are those limited to this site, or are you trying to bring some other history before us?
Okay. In general, we have concerns that a property owner will come to us one time with their property. The contractor is representing lots of properties all around the place. So that was the gist of that comment.
Okay. I just wanted to...
In this case, we look at it, I would assume, as two violations.
I have... Mr. Palmer, do you have your hand up? Okay, Mr. Fox. Then I have Mr. Sessoms.
All right. We know from... Well, we think we know...
Can we go back to the first picture that you had up looking down of the entire completed project that you said up the back? That's good. Thank you.
Yes.
We think we know that the whole property, 16 and two-thirds acres, is waterfront property.
Yes.
But we, at least I'm not sure, looking at that plat, that all of those lots across there are all waterfront individually. But it looks like from that plat that this common area where the pier is also extends along the beach.
Sorry.
And if that's the case, the individual lot owners would not have the right to wharf out. Is that correct?
We thought that same thing. However, there was a recent transfer of land, lot number 4.
Okay.
And that... I didn't include it in your packet. We were comfortable that the information we received supporting that clarified it for us. I talked to the surveyor who surveyed lot number 4 and read the deed descriptions that were in the original parcel of the 16.67 acres. And with all of that and our surveyors on staff, we felt comfortable that these lots are, in fact,
okay.
Deeded to mean low water.
So
individually.
So at the moment, they do have the right to wharf out, except for having said that they don't want to.
We believe that's the case.
Yes.
Mr. Sessoms?
So this is viewed as a community pier for all 21 lots. And where I'm going with it is if that's the case, it seems to me there either needs to be an internal legal document or with us, between each and individual property owner and the applicant. Well, the applicant needs to be an entity that's owned or represented by each one of the property owners if each one has use of the pier. Almost like a condominium association, a property owners association.
I would love to let you all ask the property owners.
Well, just a second.
But I, right now we're looking at this pier to serve those 7 waterfront lots.
Oh, just 7, not
those
all.
7 waterfront lots is what we, as far as the slips go. Now, if someone from one of the interior lots comes down and walks out on the pier, you know, we have the 2X plus 1 kind of rule that each individual private pier might get 2 slips. Therefore, if you want a community pier for one lot, that I'm confusing things even more.
I'm not confused at all. I'm very much of the understanding that, for the record, I'm going to want to know who authorized the addition, who specifically, from a personal perspective, authorized the addition from the original authorized permit on file to construct from that point outward. I want to know the name of the individual that did that. That's number one. And number two, I want to know for certain that the contractor, who he is, and I think that's been clear on the record, because that is what needs to be dealt with first and foremost. Then we can get into who is going to assume responsibility on the actual after-the-fact permit for this unauthorized construction. That's what... am I missing anything, Counselor? Is that...
No, sir. That's where we need to start. And to clear...
Mr. Schick.
A community pier does not necessarily have to have a community. It can be a group of lot owners that come together to make this one pier. Is that correct?
We have issued permits in the past, right, for everything from next door neighbors, joint use piers, to other without, as far as I know.
So these 7 lots or 5 lots
There's seven total.
That have written letters saying that they want to be on this community pier. That is the community. And so these other lots are immaterial. And actually,
they could every one of those seven people could be an applicant on the piece of paper.
On this, right. But for this specific purpose, even that doesn't come into play. We're only talking about Jane Haddon, Martin, and the original peer owner. So there's really only three groups. So, that's what I wanted to clear up is we don't have to worry about the upland groups. We don't have to worry about the other lots. That's something for future.
Correct. Okay. Maybe that's where I went
wrong. We're going to end up before it's over and done with. Somebody's going to acknowledge what we're going to call this. And it won't be something that's created just to say that it's a community pier. Somebody's going to be having their name or all the names that will be setting foot on this pier to utilize it will be on the permit. And we may have to send it back and have it revised, but I think it is ripe today. My question to you is, for the record, who was the person that authorized the additional construction of this pier from the straight initially permitted pier outbound? For the record, who authorized it?
I don't know that I can answer that.
Okay, thank you. Further questions by members of the commission? Mr. Plumlee, yes, sir.
This was noticed for hearing on behalf of this society, is that right?
The initial application... Give me one second. The application was submitted and advertised and notified in the name of Jane Haddon.
So we're here on a notice of Jane Haddon. Yeah. That's the application. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's good. All right. Further questions? Thank you for doing it. I know exactly where we're trying to go with this, and absolutely no harm, no foul. Is the applicant represented or present?
Yes.
Could you come forward, please, sir? Absolutely. Just make sure that prop does not go any further than right there.
Yes, sir.
It's like a dangerous weapon to me. Is anyone else in this matter going to be testifying? I see a man raising his right hand. Anybody else going to testify? If you are, stand up right now, please. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony that you provide today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, sir, could you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Tony Martin. I am married into the Haddon family. My wife, Lynn, is here, and my mother-in-law, Jane Haddon.
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll go use some of these. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to give our side of the rebuttal or the story here. Appreciate your time, Jay and Chip. Appreciate your time to work on this. As you can see, the size of the package is fairly voluminous. This has been going on since July. There's been a lot of correspondence back and forth between us and the VMRC. Everything has been very professional. And
thank you very much.
Appreciate your time. Mr. Bowman, you asked a question earlier about the Shaughnessy Preservation Society. It is a loosely defined homeowners association, and I say loosely defined in the sense that we do not have legal documentation for that organization at the present time. However, we're working on more formalization, but we do have homeowner-like bylaws and rules and regulations that we try to enforce within the family.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your earlier question. Just to give you a little history on what this property is, in 1950, my wife's grandparents bought the 16-plus acres of land. You have a copy of the plat in there, and I think Jay had a diagram of it. And has since been called the family vacation property, hence the name Shaughnessy has come about, and it's been commonly called that for 50-some years. Matter of fact, my wife's grandparents were named Hugh and Annie, and there's a sign as soon as you come into the property that says, "Welcome to Hugh Annie's Port." Hugh being the father and Annie being the mother. So it's kind of like high-end sport without the helicopter pad or any of the and the richness that goes along with it.
Understood.
So the property was bought in 1950 from Mr. King and conveyed to the Haddon family. In 1970, the property, the 16-plus acres, was subdivided to the seven children after the passing of both Mr. and Mrs. Haddon. I think Mr. Haddon passed in 1967, and then in honoring of his will, the property was subdivided to the existing seven children at the time. So the reason on that plat that you see in your package, the property was subdivided and really into four lots, if you will. One lot being a recreational area that included the old house, the old family house, which was the only structure on the property, which all family members stayed there, right, and access to the river. Because the topography of the land is up in the sense that it's 50-some feet off of the water for the seven lots across, but the adjoining property that's owned by the Haddon family does give you access down to the river. So the land was subdivided into that plat that you see. I think that plat was drawn up a revision of the 1923 plat. So each family member received a waterfront property lot, seven lots, block A, and each family received a lot in block B, which is the back left side, and block C, which is the back right side. And then the area in between that, again, with the access going to the river, was common land owned by all. So, and the issue that was brought up a little bit earlier by Jay about Mrs. Haddon, Jane Haddon, owning the waterfront property, she is on the tax record as far as paying the bills for the taxes. However, that access, that common area, that recreational area is owned by all seven. Yeah, but the county in Saluda, the tax records are in her name. Okay, so since 1950 and on up even to today, this property has always been a family property. It is frowned upon if there's non-family members at this location. Matter of fact, my father-in-law, the first time I came down and brought a friend down, made a comment to me. It said, "It's a privilege for you to be down here and you ought to enjoy it, but next time you come, you don't need to bring your friend."
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way he was, and you
that
can
sounds
imagine.
Sounds like a preservation society to me.
As you can imagine, I mean, even though it's 16 plus acres, there was one house down there, there was one well, there was one access to the beach, so it was for the family. It wasn't for other folks to come and use. And since that time, it has still been that. I mean, on 4th of July weekend, we'll have 75 or so family members. And we even have in our bylaws that on those, Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July weekend, you cannot bring, only your people you can bring is significant others, boyfriend, girlfriend, no friends. And it is, you ought to come to one of those if you want to see how it's enforced. But my point here is this has always been a family location, and it's always been used strictly by family. Okay, the pier and the boathouses. The original pier, and I wish I had a PowerPoint of it, but I will pass this around for you to see.
The original pier was built sometime in the early 1950s.
We're going to have to keep this for at least 30 days.
Okay, that's fine.
The original pier was built in the early 50s by the Haddon boys, if you will, the Haddon family. And on that drawing, you can see there are five covered boathouses, and there are at least two boat slips or places where you could tie up a boat without a roof on it. And the way things was always done at the river at Chauncey, and this was, and you can look at the size of this, you can tell the age simply because this is when a 2x4 was really a 2x4. But the way things, history was kept down there, whenever anything was done, your name or the event was written on the rafter on the old house. The old house has since gone through disrepair just as the pier did and has been torn down. But I saved this when the old house was being torn down because
It's got my daughter's names on it when they first came to Shunsie, and my grandchildren when they first came. But unbeknownst to me, and I've had this in my garage, so I'm going to do something special with it at some point. I don't know exactly how. But it, when we were looking into this, I looked at this, and if you'll look on here, I can leave this with you for a while, too. It says, boathouse roof completed, 8159. So that boathouse that you see there, the roof on it was completed in 1959. And I bring this up just so you understand the history and so you know.
Your record's good enough. We won't need to keep that. Okay. Thank you.
All right. So the original house, original boat and boathouse and piers was completed, I'll say 1959 when the roof was done. Okay. In 2002, the condition of the pier and boathouses, as you can see in that picture, because that picture was taken prior to it being torn down. One of my wife's cousins took that picture just to keep as a history record. Jay has, in some of his earlier oversights, they're referenced that as well, but that just kind of gives you the detail. So in 2002, we said we got to do something with the pier and the boathouses. So the family got together and everybody pitched in some money and we came up with a fund to do it. So we applied for a permit. We hired Mr. Callis with R&W Construction to do that work for us. He filled out all the paperwork, asked for the permit, and I have a copy of the letter that was issued by the Commission of VMRC on December 18, 2002, signed by Chip Reichert, who's here today, saying that we didn't need a permit because the pier at that time was classified as private. So I guess this is a letter of authorization, but no permit required. What wasn't on this application, the application requested a demolition and a rebuild, so we thought. What wasn't on the application and the drawing, and Jay has copies of those in this presentation, the rebuild only included the pier and the bulkhead, the end of the pier. It did not include additional slips or boathouses. And as you can see in that, picture that's going around, we had at least five covered boathouses. I would say we have seven, two open and five closed. So
you assumed that letter was authorization to build, rebuild pretty much in the same footprint that was present back in 1959?
Yes, sir.
That's your sworn testimony?
Absolutely.
Okay. Proceed.
So the construction of that was completed in June of 2003, and there's a plaque up on the roof of the existing pier that says boathouse roof completed June 2003, if you'd like to come down and look at that. And at the same time that was done, the two slips here were completed. So this slip was done with the rebuild, and this slip, although this end of it was not completed, but that portion was. So that portion all was done in 2003. This portion here was done this past summer. Oh, okay. I'm not up to high tech here. All right. So, now, in this past summer, while the construction was going on, we had several discussions with family members who was contributing the cost toward this, as well as Mr. Callis, who was doing the construction of this. And on June 22nd, I wrote an email to some of the family members stating a status of the new build-out and construction. And I won't read the entire thing to you. I'll submit this to you if you need it. It might be a part of Jay's package. But for our purpose of thinking that we were continuing legally, if you will, I wrote in here, I'll say, since Richard's company, R&W Marine Construction, had done the remove and rebuild work of the Shunsie Pier in 2003, he had access to the building permit information that was issued by the county in 2002. After review of the permit, Richard decided that we could move forward with the new construction as a, quote, continuation under the 2002 permit. So it was our impression that at that point we were able to continue the rebuild based on that permit. I've since learned from Jay that those permits are valid for 10 years and they need to be renewed every 3 years, but at the time I did not know that. Should have done it. But my point is that we were proceeding forward with a rebuild of the demolition that we had started in 2003. And referencing back to that picture, we had 7 boathouses at that time. We only had 2 this summer. We were looking to add one more and potentially a couple of more at some point. So if you need me to leave you this as evidence, I'll be glad to do that.
Testimony suffices as evidence.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And as Jay has mentioned, I mean, we've had numerous meetings, both face-to-face meetings, email meetings, phone calls. I live in Richmond. Mrs. Haddon lives in Richmond. We've driven to Newport News to meet with Jay and Chip to try and resolve issues. It seemed like we were always answering one question that the commission had, and we would go through that. We would answer those questions and say, all right, is this what we need to move forward? Once we get this resolved, are we done? Most of the time, the answer was yes, we're done. And I have documentation in this file here if you need to see that as well. Each time it seemed like we would, kind of peel the onion back a little bit more, or Jay and Chip's staff would, and then there would be another question. As Jay mentioned earlier, there was issues about, are you really waterfront property? So we talked to the APO, the adjoining property owners. We've gotten testimony from them, or at least letters from them saying, that's not an issue. But all this was dragged out quite extensively. So we've made trips to Newport News. We've gone back to the Piankatank River to meet with the folks whenever it was requested, and spent quite a bit of time trying to be as open and as responsive as necessary to get this resolved. And I think we have. I think Jay and Chip's folks have done as well. It's just taken a while to get to this point. My contention, and the family's contention all along, is this question of private versus community. And I'm not a lawyer, and so I don't know exactly how you would, slice and dice the word community, but I understand for a condominium type of community, it would be much different than what we have at our place.
I think the answer to be, and I would defer to counsel, if it's not private, then it is community. That pretty much has been my experience here.
Or commercial.
Well, I mean, we're in no sense a commercial location. We don't rent out any slips. We don't have any facilities for people to pump or even to tie up and use electricity or anything of that nature. I mean, we're lucky to have it for ourselves. I still have the hang up with Jay and so forth about we are private in the sense that it is strictly family members. It is not community in the sense that someone else can come in and put their boat in or tie up and use the facility. So, and we've had that discussion many, many times because the codes, I guess, are different for community versus private. And several times Jay and Chip have said, we, the commission, would recommend for your situation to have a single access to the water and do multiple slips off of it. And in fact, our family members, I have signed letters here that I think it's part of your package. I have signed letters from 5 of those saying that we don't plan to build a private pier and use our own riparian rights to have our boat slip. This is what we would want to do. From an economic standpoint of view, it makes sense. And from, an impact to the shoreline, it makes sense. So, but the commission says that's what they would recommend. So if in a sense we're doing what the commission would recommend, but then we have to pay a $5,000 rent and royalty, is kind of a little bit hard to stomach. So anyway, that's been kind of a lot of the discussion all along. You know, I'm not sure if those letters are intent. Letters are in your package. Okay, but anyway, you have that. This is legal in the sense that it's signed by five of the seven lot members, owners. And let's see what else. But even if we are classified as a community marina, you know, we've gone through the steps to get approval from the Board of Health, so we have their certificate and so forth. So that's kind of done. All right. So what am I asking you folks? I mean, obviously, we would like approval of what we have already done, and you know what we have on the table to do as far as put a roof on that new slip. I would also ask that the commission, the board here, give some leniency in the in these fees that are being proposed for us to, if you could find some way to waive this rent and royalty fee, I would ask of that. Again, our pier and boathouses was built in the early 50s. It was demolished in 2003 or 2002, rebuilt in 2003. I believe the statute for collecting rent and royalties became law in 2005, even after the original part. I don't know if that's...
The statute had always been in place. The suspension of the collection had been in place by executive order. However, that was reinstituted. So the royalty had always been in place, just the collection had been suspended.
Okay. So I would ask leniency on that. The waive of the civil charges, myself, as the project manager, if you will, of this project for the family, we all firmly believed that we were operating under an existing permit that was valid and approved by the VMRC. So in no way did we try to circumvent the system, if you will, and try to do something outside of permitting.
Martin, what did this project end up costing you? Turn the addition from the initial spine all the way out, boat lift and everything. I know it's in here, but I figured you could probably...
I can tell you right now. All that new stuff right there cost us $16,485.
Including the boat lift?
Including the boat lift. I mean, I have breakdown of docking or boardwalk and slip is, if you need it.
And I'm presuming the contractor didn't tell you that without a permit, the commission could compel you to remove the entire process?
No, sir.
I'm not doing that for any other fact other than to let you and the other folks know that, unfortunately, when you rely on contractors or whoever without doing due diligence, you put your feet in the water that's under the jurisdiction of the Marine Resources Commission, you suffer that possibility. That's plain and simple. And we hear time in and time out about contractors telling people to do this, and then it's like they rely on them, and I can understand that, but that's unfortunately the situation that you're in today. The commission could compel removal until the permit was issued.
Right. We understand, and I think Jay or someone from the VMRC appeared on the job site probably 2 days or so before this portion was completed. He allowed us to continue the construction to complete this, but asked us do not do any further construction, i.e. roof or anything. And
well, the reason that he did that, I can assure you, is not that he was in any way condoning what had been done. What he was doing was making sure that it was allowed to be remain in a safe condition versus a haphazard condition of lack of completion. That's the reason that he did that.
Right.
Questions, Mr. Schick?
Yeah, I'd just like to get this timeline down. So, 2002, you have your permit for a private pier under the name of Chris
Morrell,
right. And you were to understand that permit would allow you to build back in the same structure area, basically seven slips.
Right.
Okay.
I mean that was the assumed knowledge that, I mean, that when we went into demolition and rebuild, right, that was the assumption at that time.
At that time, you built the two slips and the main walkway in 2002.
Correct.
Now,
it was completed
come to
in
present,
2003.
What motivated you to come to VMRC to get a permit for the new addition?
I didn't.
How did you come about notifying? I mean, did we know first? Or, I mean, how did the permit application come about? What was the conversation that caused that permit application?
R&W Construction did the demolition and rebuild in 2002. And I contacted Mr. Callis, R&W Marine Construction, as well as a couple of other contractors, and met with them and told them what we were planning on doing, and I got quotes. And the pier that Mr. Callis built was very, very good construction. It was 8 years old and still looked very, very good shape. And his price was very competitive with the others, so I chose Mr. Callis. And we met on several occasions and kind of hammered it out and came to an agreement.
Did he apply for the permit?
And Richard, you correct me if I'm wrong. I believe the way the permit, again, Richard's staff had informed him that we were operating on a good permit. I mean, don't let me speak for you, but when you get your chance. But the way the commission got involved, I believe, is Mr. Woodward appeared on the job site at some point in time, once the construction had already been started, asked for the permit, was sent to Richard's office, and I guess at that point, Richard and his staff and Jay uncovered that the permit that we thought we were operating under was, one, expired because it hadn't been renewed in 3 years, and two, the original drawing on it did not have the rebuild of the boathouses on it. So that's when Mr. Callis' staff applied for a permit after the fact.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Okay. I'll have some questions of staff concerning that time frame, but I appreciate your input.
Thank you. Further questions? Mr. Palmer, then Mr. Fox.
Ms. Martin, you said there's seven property owners in the family that are entitled to the use of the pier.
Correct.
Do they have shares of the pier?
Shares?
Yes.
No, sir. I mean, not legally.
Okay, but
the subdivision. Jay, can I put this plat? Where get the plat back up. The subdivision of the land, and if, how does this thing work?
That's okay. Not necessary.
It's not going to go on the land. See this recreational area? Well, if you follow that all the way down, it comes down to the river. And the pier is right there.
Right, but that's not going where I'm asking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If you would go back to the picture of the pier.
Back to, all right, Jay, back to the pier.
Okay. Okay, but you said that all seven property owners have access to the pier.
Correct.
So if looking at one of those boats that's sitting on the boat lift, we just suppose that one of those boats were taken off the boat lift. If another property owner wanted to put his boat on that lift, could he do it? Or is that lift belong to one particular person?
That would be one particular person.
Okay, one particular person. You held up a Board of Health approval for the pier.
Correct.
What exactly is approved of?
I'll have to read it to you. I mean, it basically said we can operate. I think this is a waiver of the requirements to operate a marina.
Okay.
I mean, since we're classified a community marina,
in a sense, we're not.
I mean, we don't. According to the law, we are.
Actually, you are classified as a marina other. You are classified as a marina other, since it is a community use pier. With individual share, since one person cannot put his boat on your boat lift, it's an individual share. It's a community use marina. All parties involved contribute to the use of that pier, correct? If the repairs have to be done, all the parties contribute to it. It's not just like you wouldn't just say, okay, I have to fix these planks. These planks on the way out there need to be repaired, and the bill is $700. Everybody contributes $100, correct?
Yes.
You have no pump-out facilities, and there's a reason you have no pump-out facilities. Of course, according to the Board of Health, you are within walking distance of the bathrooms of all the people in the community. If you could be classified as a marina other, and I say this because I'm involved in a marina other classification also, you have to have an association president, somebody who is responsible for it, along with a treasurer, board of trustees.
Council said it's okay.
So you have to have one person who is responsible and has to be incorporated as a marina other.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's what I said earlier.
Yes, sir.
But I thought this was a waiver for those requirements from the Board of Health. I mean, provided that we have put a sign up, I mean, there's a couple of things that we need to do. In accordance with Section 180 and Section 190 of the Commonwealth of Virginia Sanitary Regulations of Marinas and Boat Moorings Regulation, I'm approving the exemption subject to the following condition. One, Shaughnessy Preservation Society will not allow anyone to use the boating facilities unless they are property owners of the SPS or a bona fide guest of someone who has use of the mooring facilities. Two, boats with installed toilets with a discharge overboard or a sewage holding tank are prohibited from mooring at this facility. And three, overnight occupancy of boats will not be permitted.
I think we're getting off track. For the record, that is a community pier. If that pier is not your pier in your name, which only you can use as a waterfront property owner, it's a community pier.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is. Council, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Well, and I understand that. I was just saying, you know, on our behalf, going into this project this summer, it was a private pier.
Understood.
And our use of it is private in the sense that it's private for family members only.
But it's used by more than one family member.
True.
Further questions? Mr. Lane?
You emphasize the family ownership nature of this property. Is there anything to prohibit these individuals that were selling an individual lot to anyone?
No, sir.
There are no restrictions on the lot that prohibit to give other family members first choice, sir.
Other than verbal and other than what has happened in the past, that's where I said we're a loosely defined organization. We're in the process of trying to put some legal definition to that. But there is, if you will, an unwritten family practice that any sale of any land goes to family members first. And that has happened on a couple of occasions. For example, I mean, Jay mentioned a little while ago of a recent transaction, a recent survey that was done that did show that the property line of the waterfront property went to the mean low watermark. That was a sale of the property from one family member to another.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you, sir. Mr. Callis, do you wish to be heard? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Set your name for the record, please, ma'am.
Lynn Martin.
And you've been sworn. Proceed, please.
My heart is going really fast. I take a deep breath. thank you for your time. I just wanted to come up here because I do have your time, and it's so many of you up here. I don't even know if this is going to be pertinent or not, but I just have to say this. I don't faint because my heart's beating so fast. Jane Haddon is my mother, and my poor mother has been through and back over this whole thing. My grandparents are Big Mama and Big Daddy, and they bought this land years ago for the whole purpose of our big family when they were dead, that my aunts and uncles, my sisters, my cousins, my everybody, which consists of over 100 people, that we could go to the river and have a great time. And I know all my cousins, and people tell me all the time, I can't believe that you know everybody so close in your family. And it's because Big Mama and Big Daddy did this. And we have a great, fabulous, loving family. And I know Big Mama and Big Daddy right now are just really upset over all of this. I would like for you all just to put yourself in air shoes and just be us for a while. Things are not black and white in life. And, you know, we've got all this political stuff and all this fancy stuff and all that, and maybe some stuff is legal and all that kind of stuff. But I worry about my daughter, Tiffany and Brittany, and their family and their children and all my cousins and everybody years from now, when they're going to be coming down to this property when I'm dead, because I'm 62 years old, and I've been coming to this property since I was a baby. I used to live there every summer for 3 months out of every single summer, and my cousins and I are like sisters because of that. And, you know, y'all just take all this in and make sure you have the records right so that when my children and their children and everybody go to this river place, which is like heaven, and it's a shame everybody doesn't have it, I don't want them to have to go through all this. So I want it to all get straight and straight for my family. Chester wanted to come today. He's 92 years old. He's the matriarch of our family. He was coming, but he can't come because his wife has been in the hospital and he wanted to stay at home with her. I wish she could meet him. And, you know, this probably has nothing to do with anything, what I'm saying, but I cannot go to sleep tonight unless I have said this in front of all of y'all. And that's all I have to say. I'm sorry if I took up your time.
Our time is yours, ma'am. And just for the record, I grew up in Claremont, Virginia, on the James River, where Mama Sarah and Daddy Bill had the same type of house, same type of situation, 4th of July, Memorial Days, Labor Days. We had a family of 5 initial children, and it was at the time 60 and 70 family members there as well. So when you talk about your grandparents, I know about Mama Sarah and Daddy Bill as well. And I can tell you that that thought process has gone through my mind as well. So don't think it's lost on this commission. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. And thank you. Mr. Callis, you wish to be heard? You state your name for the record, please, sir.
Sir, my name is Richard Callis.
And you have been previously sworn.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Proceed.
I'm the contractor and permit person, I suppose, on this project. My staff or the people that handle the permits for me didn't follow this through, come up with what they should have come up with. All this would have been avoided had they done this. I, in turn, accepted what they gave me. And that's why we're where we are. The original built here was permitted, and I find out that that wasn't permitted properly because what was done to, in the application. So it's no, you know, but it was permitted as a private peer, which
so you're saying that you normally have a staff that handles permitting for you?
No, I don't do permits. I have someone else for me.
Is that staff person
still? He doesn't work for me anymore, but...
Okay, that's my next question.
They don't. But anyhow, yes, sir. I don't find that to.
And you were under the premise that your staff member had told you that what you were doing
I
was...
I told him what I had, and I was told by the original permit person, or the person that got the original permit, Mr. Moran, that it was his peer. It was private property. And I didn't search it any further, which I should have. But that's where it all came from. And they wanted to tear down the existing pier and the existing boathouses and put back the pier and several slips. But again, the pier was filed for as a private here, and slips were torn down. All the covered slips were all torn down. So that's why we all here today, because, well, I screwed up on the permit application. And
you responsibility of it. You accept the civil charge if
you I have to, yes, sir. It's not.
No, you don't have to. But I would be misleading you if I said that you did. But if you accept it, then that's where we stand. Go ahead, sir. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Are we still working on, in my situation here, is the after-the-fact application or permit? It's a contract.
We're working on all of it.
So you, the ongoing part, then, so this thing is most likely going to continue on to another.
No, sir. What we're trying to do is decide exactly a couple things. Who did what wrong, whether it should stay there or not, whether we should consider or allow the after-the-fact permit as far as the continuation, as far as the roof is concerned. We're trying to, and ultimately, whose name will be on this permit under the Shaughnessy Preservation Society, because I don't believe that we can issue a permit per se without having one specific party responsible for that preservation society. So as I see, those are the four things, and there may be more as far as my commission is concerned that I may have missed that will advise me thereof. So
all four of these things are are on the table then, right?
Absolutely.
So neither one of them will be separated and decided on. Again, my situation is, as I told you, I'm the contractor. I did the work.
I'm hoping to take one. Yep, I'm hoping to address all those matters before everybody leaves here today.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate your time.
I think Mr. Schick has a question for you.
I just wanted to clear up. Now, the original permit 2002 was in Mr. Morrell's name.
Yes, sir.
Now, when they approached you for the addition to that pier, and it was in a different name, a different person came to you
mm-hmm.
about that. Now, did you discuss? I mean, how come at that point in time you say, hey, how come a different person wants to add on to this private pier? Well, how did that conversation go by?
The permit was issued originally to do it, but it wasn't. That's my fault again. I mean, I did not. It was issued to put all the steps back. Whose name they were in, but it really didn't make any difference. Oh, I see that it does, but anyway, at that
Thank
time
you.
It did not.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Callis. Anyone else wish to be heard on this matter? Anyone here in opposition to this matter? Matters before the commission for discussion and action.
I just wanted to ask, Jay, how did you find out that this was going on? I don't know if I was asleep when that part came through or...
We received the application on August 4th.
So you received an application?
Yes, sir.
Before you knew that construction was going on?
I had never been to the site before August 24th, subsequent to receiving the application. Right. That's why I went to the site.
So somebody knew that an additional application needed to be done beyond the 2002 letter? Without our office,
the application right. on August 4th, it came to me. I do Middlesex County. When I looked at it on desktop right. review, I saw the multiple property lines.
Right.
I went to our GIS. I started looking at it, and some bells went off that I need to get some additional information. I knew I was going to have to go see it. It did not look like a private pier to me.
Right.
Therefore, I went on site. When I went on site, expecting to see.
Is it got a signature on it? It doesn't even have a signature on it, does it?
I'm expecting to see this. Well, expecting to see this, which was the application.
Right.
I see the new construction on the other photograph, and subsequently determined that this in 02, I think that's kind of getting lost. There's comments that in 02 they applied to demolish and rebuild. We can only go by what we get in an application.
Right.
This is the information that was presented to us in 02. It does say rebuild here, covered deck. It does say remove and rebuild existing pier here with an arrow. This just says remove existing boathouse. There is nothing else proposed in 02. The additional lot line. Why it wasn't represented, I don't know. But I did not get down to the site until... This is what I saw the day I got to the site.
Who signed the application that you received in August of 2011? I don't think my page has that.
Original application.
R.W. Callis.
It's all tangled up here. Hold on one second. This is the original application we got on August 4th. Mr. Callis had a cover sheet, and I could bring this forward. Application's name, Jane Haddon, care of Tony and Lynn Martin. Property owner's name, Jane Haddon. Agent's name, R&W Marine Construction. The application is signed by Tony Martin and Lynn Martin. It's a it helps, I can bring this forward.
Yeah. Okay.
Further questions?
Thank you, Jay. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I talk about some of the details, I'd like to just respond to one of the comments that was made by the applicant related to how upsetting this is, and I can appreciate that. We've had a lot of debate up here or discussion about the technical distinctions and legal distinctions about whether or not the applicant has standing, whether it should be the society versus an individual, et cetera. And that's still a question that we're going to have to resolve. But there's nothing wrong with a common use pier at all. And I hope that's not one of the takeaways from that debate. I mean, for us, that's simply a matter of trying to resolve a question of standing as it relates to the permit. And obviously, this site has been very prominent in your family's history, and that's great. Having said that, at the heart of this, there's a permitting problem as it relates to what's been built versus what was originally permitted. Looking back at the plan view drawing that Jay just had up there, for us it's Exhibit 5G4, what was originally represented to the commission as what was going to be built was in fact a relatively limited structure in addition to the demolition of the boathouse adjacent to that. What was built in 2003 departed significantly from that drawing, and whether that construction was on a private pier that may have been approved on a no permit necessary letter, or whether it was a commercial pier or a community use pier, any departure from that plan view drawing should have been represented back to the commission and submitted for approval, and it was not. So, there was a permitting problem that started back then. That was then continued with the second wave of construction that occurred more recently. If you look at what's there, it departs very significantly from the original drawing. Whether that permit was expired technically or not, it is a significant departure from that original permit. And I think I think that responsibility rests with the contractor in terms of departing from what was originally permitted and applied for. So I think that's at the core of this. Having said that, we do need to try to resolve the question of the applicant and who has standing. I think it would be problematic to issue a permit to a society that doesn't exist in a legal sense. That is, that's not somehow a formal association or LLC or corporation. And I think it might be appropriate to issue the permit to the individual, even as a community peer, or potentially to all seven waterfront landowners if they are, in fact, all commonly owning that piece of land. I think that's a question that we can continue to debate up here and get some input from council on. But I think, again, at its heart, it's really just a permitting problem in that what was built departed very significantly from what was originally permitted, and that we do have to address that. Staff's recommended civil charges related to that. I think the responsibility for that lies primarily with the contractor, because the applicant was relying on the advice of the contractor as they entered into this. But I just wanted to make those several points.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Further comment, Mr. Schick?
If this had been gone through the permitted process properly, everything would have been all happy. I mean, this is a good plan. It's a good pier. I love what you all have down there. I can see it is a piece of heaven. I mean, that's great. I don't think we have the whole story up here, because somehow somebody was motivated to send in an application on an extension of a pier that they thought was already approved. That being said, I think what the staff recommendations have here are sufficient in taking care of the situation. As to the royalties, the whole idea is that when you have a community pier or a joint ownership pier, you only have one extension going out to it. It is less of an intrusion on the bottom, but it's also cheaper to build a community pier. We have royalties for that because community piers, marinas, multi-ownership of piers all come under the same classification. So we traditionally don't say because it's a private group of people who own the pier that there's a waiver. So I think the $5,000 in the long run would be a lot better to spend on royalties than to making individual piers. So it, in the long run, it does still come out to be cheaper. And I just can't see to waive those fees.
And if I could, just to follow up, if it has not been explained as far as what the royalties do and what royalties are intended to do, what you have done when you build this pier is you remove that entire bold footprint out of the utilization of the rest of the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia. So what that $5,000-some-odd dollars does is gives you the privilege of having the ownership or the usership, the sole usership, of that specific area that's taken away from the other citizens as a public trust. So that's what you're doing. It's not a simply a transaction that the Commonwealth of Virginia does to say, oh, you're doing this, therefore you're going to pay a royalty. It's not. What it is, it's a user fee, basically, for the benefit of using that bowl footprint. That's what a royalty is. We're finished debating. I'm just trying to explain it to you at this point. Further comments? Mr. Plumlee, yes, sir.
I'm in agreement with what's been said thus far. I think that I think this family is trying to proceed appropriately. From what I gather, we received an application from an office that had discovered the error, and that brought attention to this issue and brought it before us. And it is, as this community peer, it falls subject to this law, and we can't waive that. I have sympathy for the family in that regard, that everything that was said to us, I totally believe. But I think we have to follow the rules for everyone here, and that in the long run it's going to serve the family appropriately if we can find the proper way to convey this permit and make sure that there's no need to come back before us.
The council has an idea on that we've discussed, Mr. Plumlee, but you're spot on. Thank you for that.
That's sure. All I have to say.
Thank you, sir. If Mr. Kugelman can respond to that inquiry as to, and Mr. Martin, you may need to come forward for this if you would, please. And if not you, then whomever you point out. Mr. Kugelman.
Thank you, sir. Counsel for the commission has concern with issuing the permit to an unincorporated association only because it doesn't permit the commission to take appropriate enforcement action should it need to be done. A tight-knit family group, whatever. There's no legal entity that we could hold accountable for violations or deviations from the permitting process. And I suspect, having litigated for 15 years, that it would probably result in a whole lot of finger-pointing, but not me. And so that leaves the commission in a very untoward position. And so what I've recommended to the commissioner, and I recommend to the commission, is that the permit be issued to an individual so that that individual is responsible for permit compliance. And
the question is, are you willing to accept the permit on behalf
of a single individual? I would have to.
If not,
I have one follow-up question for counsel.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. And
may the permit be conveyed from the individual to the society if they get their paperwork in line?
Incorporation?
Yeah. If they become a public entity?
So they can go out and do what they need to do to become the public entity, and the individual may then convey those rights and duties to the association or whatever they decide to deem themselves. Is that appropriate? I haven't researched that issue.
I've read the code section several times today, and I don't see anything that prohibits the commission from setting up a conveyance of a permit, a transference of a permit. I would recommend, if that's the course the commission is contemplating, that the permit have very specific language about providing documentation that it is in fact a legal entity and that the legal entity, however its bylaws read, has voted to accept responsibility for the permit, and that also be made part of what's submitted to the commission.
But the bottom line is, I think is what's been discussed by these two very capable attorneys, is that if you or someone accept the permit, should the Shaughnessy Preservation Society become incorporated or recognized under the legal basis of the law, you could then convey your individual ownership, per se, to that entity that's properly formed under the color of law. So the question is today, if we issue the permit, we need to find out. We're not going to issue the permit to the preservation. At least I would recommend to the commission that we not issue a permit to an entity that's not recognized under the color of law. It's got to be issued to an individual.
I think the individual must also be Ms. Haddon, because that is the advertised individual on the coming before us. I don't think it can be another individual because of the way that this was.
Mr. Fox?
Well, I'm with Mr. Plumley on this. It would seem that whoever Middlesex County says owns that common area, who pays the taxes and so on, and I presume that's Ms. Haddon, but I don't know, should be the person that
Ms. Haddon is just the administrator. She pays the taxes for everybody. I mean, it's owned by,
When the tax bill comes in, what name is on it?
Jane Haddon.
I'm not so sure, though, because this is a structure over the waters of the Commonwealth of Virginia. It's not an upland structure. It's not an upland property.
Right.
Look, can I ask counsel? I mean, I don't completely understand what y'all just discussed, but in 2002, when the permit was issued, it was really issued in Mr. Morrell's name, which is really not correct at that point, because that permit was on the common area. It's on the recreational area. So, I mean, it just happened, and the commission approved that back in 2002.
Counsel, slip by.
But he was exempted. It was not a permit issued. It was a letter, I believe, stating that they were exempted.
No permit required.
There was no permit required.
Correct.
Mr. Kugelman, then Mr. Sussens.
Yes. Mr. Plumley pointed out very, very aptly, the letter you have wasn't a permit. It was an exception to the need for a permit under Title 28.2, Chapter 12. Private piers for non-commercial use don't need a permit. And I presume that Mr. Nykerk believed that that was the situation at hand, and hence his response. Otherwise, I believe that Mr. Nykerk probably would have told whoever wrote the letter or inquired of the commission that they needed a permit or to apply for a permit before they could build a pier.
We're building on something, on an error or an oversight that occurred in 2002, and now we're building on that. I mean, I would think some consideration would be made in the sense of what happened then and brought to the commission, whether it was oversight on our part, whether it was oversight on Mr. Nykerk's part, or whether it was oversight on R&W Construction. It happened. And now we're moving based on that foundation, which is flawed.
That's the after-the-fact process. In other words, we're saying there was a mistake. Can we permit it after the fact? That's right. Why we're all here.
Maybe we want to go back and...
Mr. Commissioner, essentially we're doing not only after the fact of the addition, we're doing it after the fact of the whole pier.
Right.
So we could put it in one name, regardless of who started... What? That's and that correct. Doesn't matter.
My concern is on that as well, and I brought this up earlier about the rent and royalties. I mean, we're really going back retroactive to collect rent and royalties on something that happened in 2003 that at that time wasn't customary to collect rent and royalties. I mean, they were assessed but waived. So here, I hear what you're saying, that you want to collect for the entire footprint. I do have some questions about the measurement, but... If it's not in your ability to waive the entire amount, I would certainly think that what happened in 2003 shouldn't apply to today if it was customary not to collect rent and royalties at that time.
I'll tell you this. That rent and royalty issue for $5,000 is what we're going through here today. I'm almost, what we could do today is compel, since everything is messed up, is to remove everything, start off and let somebody start out with a fresh permit application, then we'd know we'd get it right. That's about where we are right now, because I'll tell you, we're trying to work with you and trying to get there. I think you're asking for something, an exemption that's unreasonable. I understand your point, but it's Mr. Sessions.
I noted your pause when you were asked if you'd be the single applicant, and I'm looking a little more at real estate law right now. If that's a community pier for seven property owners or seven individual lots, potentially seven different property owners, it seems to me that there should be a document, a property owners association document generated that's an encumbrance on each one of those properties, on the deed of each one of those properties. And each one of those owners, now and in the future, will be responsible for that. So it would be basically what's known as a property owners association, but it would be an encumbrance on each one of those seven lots and the responsibility on the current owner and any future owner. That's a legal point I'm just throwing out there.
Well, is it, I know it's not commonplace, but is it unlawful to have a pier, a community pier, owned by seven individuals?
Council?
No, sir. But
so in light of not having a legal HOA, we have seven owners, which originated from a single owner. I mean, the picture I gave you of the original pier in 1950 was owned by, Hugh Watson Haddon.
Question.
And then, I don't know, maybe the legal part of that, but does that convey in his will to pass that on? Wouldn't each one of those inheritance own 1/7? And we still be legal?
I don't have the benefit of the will, sir, so I cannot answer that question. But in your mind, who owns that pier?
The entire family.
And that would be based on some of the earlier representations I've heard, 100 people. Or are we talking about seven property owners?
Well, I mean, who owns it? Who pays the bills? I mean, this.
I'm not trying to be vague, sir. I'm trying to understand.
Well, legally, it's just seven waterfront property owners.
Okay.
And I have a copy of the deed in my folder.
I'm just trying to understand, sir. That's all. I'm not. Trust me, I'm not trying to make things difficult. I'm trying to make sure that the advice I provide the commission here is good advice, so that we avoid problems in the future. This isn't about. I promise you to give you a hard time or anything. If it seems that way, I apologize. That is not my intent at all.
I'm saying.
Okay, well, I appreciate that.
Mr. Plumley.
Sorry, Mr. Fisher. The problem here is not everybody's applied for this. We have one application. So now we're going to issue a permit to people that aren't here and aren't asking for it? I mean, they may be members of your family, but they may not be wanting to be on a permit. We have one name.
You know what, Mr. Plummer, you're exactly right. And I think what we're doing is it's like a cat chasing the tail. At the present time, we have one person's name, and that name should be the one that's on there. And we don't need to ask the person whether they'll accept it or not. Bottom line is, we can issue the permit, the staff recommendations such as that, and do whatever is appropriate. Yeah. I think you have hit it right on the head, and I appreciate that. Matters before the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate all the discussion we've had trying to flesh these details out. I would suggest that we move forward with approving the after-the-fact approval that's been requested associated with the application in the name of Jane Haddon, and I would offer a motion that we approve the request for after-the-fact authorization and include staff's recommendations for royalties and triple permit fees. Additionally, that the civil charge of $1,800 be entered with the contractor.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second. I have an addition, if permitted, that there be an addition to allow them to transfer. I don't know, and council may correct me on this, if it can be allowed to allow them to transfer into proper in a proper name of a community entity, and to provide them that opportunity so that they can take it out of the name of the individual into a properly created community entity that they've been discussing, if it's all done lawfully, and they can demonstrate it by providing the proper documentation to the VMRC at a later time.
I believe that can be done, but I believe we also have to have the consent of the permittee, the person applying for the permit, because we're altering. Is Ms. is the person whose name on the permit here, you are here, ma'am? Okay, I'm sorry. There's a lot of names, and I apologize for not keeping up. If she's amenable to that, Mr. Plumlee, I think that would be perfectly legitimate, as long as we're clear that the entity we're talking about is a legal entity recognized under the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
I would hope the applicant understands what I'm saying, that there be provided an opportunity for this association to be created lawfully, that that information be presented to the staff of the VMRC to verify that it's an actual legal entity and that ownership could transfer from the individual to the association so that the individual would no longer carry the responsibility solely for the permit. Is that understood and agreed to?
Acceptable to the maker of the motion?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would accept that as a friendly amendment to the motion, provided that the documentation be provided to the satisfaction of commission staff.
For second of the motion.
I'd like to second and clarify that the motion was all of the recommendations of staff of civil penalties, permit fees, and royalties.
Mr. Chairman, I had included only the civil charge against the contractor, not against the applicant. My rationale for that was the fact that the applicant was relying, I think, exclusively on the advice of the contractor, and I think it's clear that the contractor had departed significantly from the plan view drawings, but their understanding of what was being permitted, what they were authorized to do, rested with the advice they received from that marine contractor.
Okay. I'll second as proposed.
Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.